Maximum Threshold, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Chris Green.
Hey, Chris, what's going on, man?
How you doing, man?
Oh, pretty good, man. Just hanging out here. Just had a band on here called Red Rain. Just had them on just like 2 minutes ago.
Oh, nice. Good band?
Oh, yeah. Pretty good, man. Pretty rocking.
Yeah, how you been?
Pretty melodic, hard rock kind of thing. Something you hear on the radio.
Right. What kind of stuff?
Yeah. Well, your new stuff, man, your solo stuff there is pretty... That's pretty badass.
I'm glad you like it, mate.
Oh, and I just recently got turned on to that. I'm like, damn, man, this is some really good stuff. That's kind of stuff I like to cruise around and just, you know, put the pedal down and just listen to that and just dream off into it, man. It's pretty heavy shit.
Yeah, it's good lead foot music.
It is. So what's going on, man?
Well, I'm sitting in. I've got myself a new little Black Star amp, and I'm just sitting in front of the fire playing guitar, just shredding up and down scales.
How's that Black Star doing? What model do you have?
Actually, I just got this little combo practice amp thing. It's one of those like stereo 20s.
I got
so you. It's got stereo effects built into this like tiny little combo practice amp. I love practicing like that with low volume. You know, it's good couch stuff.
Have you tried the new Marshall Code amps they got out?
No, I haven't.
Oh, man. They got the modeling all inside of it and everything. It's pretty sweet and it's cheap too. They have a 25 watt, a 50, they got a 100 watt, and then they have the 100 watt amp, the head as well. And it's pretty cool. It goes into like, I want to say it has like 100 different presets in it. It has all their different amps that they've had.
It's like a modeling amp.
Yeah, and it has the Jubilee amp with it, and it has
ooh, nice. That's probably my next purchase.
Oh,
by the way,
man,
I'm probably going to get an old school Jubilee.
Oh, those are sweet, man. And I got the DSL 100, and we use with
my
band.
Yeah, I play all the time.
Oh, I love that amp. That amp has some balls.
The old
to it.
School ones, though, man. Yeah. You have to have the old model.
I know. I got to come up with some money to get it. And I had the opportunity to, you know, I had like $900 to play with. I'm like, can I get those 2000 or should I get that DSL 100H? Yeah, I think I'll go with the DSL right now. So I know the JCM is going to cost me a lot more, but.
Yeah, those DSLs, man, the reason I started playing them in the first place is because every festival that we went to, they were the box standard amp that would always be there. So I was like, you know what? I might as well change over and start using these things and get used to them, because there's no point me playing through, like, you know, I have an EVH here and a Framus and a couple of different Marshall amps. And I was like, you know what? Let me just get used to using this one. Then when I turn up at a festival, I can just dial in my sound and I'm ready to go without even needing a sound check.
Oh, yeah. The DS, they're so easy, man. You crank it all the way up and then you just roll with it. You just tune down, pull down
amazing.
Stuff.
And I keep them on low gain as well. Yeah. I probably don't go above 6 on the gain on those.
Yeah, and they don't feedback either, which is really good. Shocking.
I know. Well, only if you want them to. Stand in front of them, then you get good feedback.
I got this AVT 50 that I picked up, and those things are pretty, they're pretty wild for what they are, as being like the hybrid Marshall from, I think, about 10, 15 years ago, whatever. And those things come, I just noticed they have a fan inside of them. And it kind of blew me away, because I never saw an amp that had a fan inside of it.
Well, they should have put them inside the DSLs because like the old DSLs, which are the good ones, they've got an overheating problem. So you'll go through some, the amp will bust on you at least once in its lifetime.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that. Got to replace some heat sinks and stuff in them.
Sorry to give you the bad news. It's going to happen.
Well, I'm glad I don't put a lot of hours on it, so it'll probably last me a lifetime. I've been using these apps on my phone. Yeah, this Tone Bridge app that I use with an iRig. Are you familiar with iRigs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I write in my phone, and I use the Tone Bridge. Tone Bridge, they have like... probably over 100 different, about 100 different, I guess you would say, like little, like songs and bands, and the way their guitars were, music is put together is like sound effects. Like they'd have like a Van Halen song sound. So they'd emulate what Eddie Van Halen's right. guitar was and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best ones that I found. And it's a free app on there too.
Yeah, technology is kind of almost running away with us as far as these amp simulators and stuff is concerned. I see more and more people out on the road using campers now, mm-hmm. you know, because they don't want to drag their gear around. And, you know, it may not be as good as the actual amp in the terms of, you know, response and being able to quickly adjust, mm-hmm. you know, on stage. But, you know, I've seen Queensryche use them. I've seen so many of these bands just, you know, just getting on that one. I'm a purist, so I'm still staying away from it.
Yeah, I basically just run right straight into like my DSL, and I use an overdrive and a wah pedal, and that's about it. And maybe I'll throw in there.
That's what you need.
Yeah, just straight, because the more stuff you put in there, it takes that signal away from you, and it kind of sucks.
I'm a total meat and veg player, mate. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, if people come up to me and they say, "Oh man, how'd you get that guitar sound?" I'm like, I literally just plug my guitar into the amp. Mm-hmm. I've got like a tuner, I've got a like a TC Electronic flashback delay for when I'm doing solos and stuff. Yeah. But the sound is, it's just the guitar and the amp. Yep. You know, that's just the way I like it. Mm-hmm. It's less to go wrong.
Yep. And your sound, man, is perfect. And
I appreciate that.
You do, man. And you know, been following your music over for years, and you know, with your other band, and man, you are the guru when it comes to guitar playing.
Thanks, man. I don't know about that. There's a lot of good players out there. They're getting younger and younger.
Do you put together like a little dojo kind of thing where you get people coming in and you're doing training sessions with them?
I wish. I used to teach, actually, for many years. I taught in colleges in England.
Oh, sweet.
And had some great, great students as well, you know, guys that went on to, you know, tour and, you know, actually make a living out of it. It was good to be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like their little release, you know, a bit at school, and they'd be doing geography and science and stuff, and then all of a sudden it was guitar lessons with me, you know, and I'd be at this posh college just dressed the way that I dressed, you know, jeans, long hair, band t-shirts, all this kind of stuff. And they just want to come in and half the time just talk about, you know, what's it like on the road? You know, I'll tell them a few tour stories. And it was good fun. I used to love doing it.
What was the main reason why you picked up the guitar?
My dad was a musician. Mm-hmm. He was quite a successful musician. He was in Cliff Richard's band, okay. you know, Chuck Berry and stuff like that. And so, you know, from he played, cause he was born in 1944 and he started playing in bands in 1959. I think he played in 7 decades before he passed away. So I grew up around live music. I grew up with him being on TV all the time and, him being on the road. And, you know, sometimes his bands would play like residencies in Switzerland. So he'd drag the family over to Switzerland with him. And I always grew up around music. So it was just, I guess it was just bound to happen that it was that some instrument was going to attract me. And, and really he had an acoustic guitar in his office and I used to just go in there and like bang away on it, not knowing what I was doing. And in the end, he was like, "Look, if you're going to bang on that thing, I might as well just teach you how to make it sound, say chords." And I was 11 at the time, and I just completely ran with it.
Mm-hmm. I hear you on that. I remember when I first started playing, and it wasn't even because I wanted to play guitar. I wanted to use the guitar. Like my mother got me an acoustic guitar, and she signed me up for guitar lessons. I knew what she was doing. She was using it to get me the hell out of her hair. So I would walk. I'd go walk into the guitar class, but on the way I'd have cigarettes hid inside my acoustic, so I would use that as a way to smoke cigarettes. I'm like 9 years old walking the street with a guitar, smoking cigarettes, going to guitar class. That was the main reason. I've never put it down since.
Right, there you go, man. There you go.
Yeah, my brother did the same thing.
I used to have a lot of my students, you know, say to me, my parents have said that I should start on the acoustic guitar and, you know, is that the right way to do it? And, you know, I said to them, I've got to be honest with you. I think it's a cost thing. I think parents generally don't mind spending $30 on an acoustic guitar. they don't want to go and spend like, you know, $150 on an electric guitar. So now electric guitars are so cheap. Mm-hmm. I used to tell the parents, look, really, you're better off with an electric guitar because you can just unplug it whenever you want.
That's it. You know? Take the cord.
Get them on it straight away rather than having to go through this kind of rite of passage of mm-hmm. banging away on these acoustic guitars with like 2-inch action, you know, like forcing calluses, you know, on your hands.
Yeah, that's it. What was your first amp?
My first amp was... Let me see. It would have been one that I borrowed from my dad. So it would have been like a PV Bandit, you know, one of those things a wasp, like a swarm of wasps in a mm-hmm. jar.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the worst kind of sound. But the first real amp I got was like a solid state Laney. And okay. I stayed on Laney for quite a while, actually. Yeah. One of my favorite amps was the Laney VH100.
It's okay.
Really, really good amp. Paul Gilbert. It's basically like the 3-channel version of what Paul Gilbert used, you know, mm-hmm. the GH100. Really good amps, man. A little noisy, but I'm telling you, they're just like for playing lead guitar, really great tone.
I remember my first amp that I had. It actually wasn't a real amplifier. It was a home stereo. It was with a turntable. It was one of those it was called Electrolux. So it had the record player and had the radio with it. And so I did was I took the wires that went to the needle and I spliced them. And I took a guitar cord and I tied them to it. And I was able to play my guitar through my stereo. It sounded like crap, but
it sounds like the kind of story that ends in someone getting electrocuted.
I never got zapped from it. As far as I remember, I did have a lot of memory loss, though. So maybe I did get zapped. I just don't remember.
That's pretty inventive, mate. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it was loud too. I think it was like a 50-watt stereo too. So that thing cranked up, and people heard this garbage that I was playing. Crazy Train was coming out. That's what it was. So that was stuff I was learning. And imagine how horrible that is with a kid when they first started learning that song at real loud levels in your neighborhood. That's pretty bad.
Or with that really clean guitar tone as well at the same time.
So what else is going on with you, man?
Well, I've got this, just released this new solo EP,
mm-hmm.
Unveil, which I'm really, really happy about.
Yeah.
And it's been going really well. I've received some really, really lovely comments and reviews about it. And it was really just something I wanted to throw out there and, just for personal reasons, you know, I wasn't doing it for any kind of monetary benefit.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of get it off my chest.
That's kind of how music is these days,
Yeah, say again?
That's basically how the music is these days. You got to do it for the love of it, not for looking for money out of it.
I do, yeah. If you're doing it for the money, stop playing country.
That's right.
And just also got back off of a tour with Twiketta. I just got back last week, been out in Europe for about 6 weeks, and that tour went really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Have you done, you did M3 Fest, haven't you, with them?
Yeah, okay. A couple of years ago.
Yeah, so you got to meet one of the guys who does the show with us, Michael Strong, down at M3 Fest. So I know he interviewed the whole band there.
Right, okay, yeah, he put that, in our... in our cabin, mm-hmm. our little dressing room cabin.
Yeah. So what's the plan this summer with you? Are you going to take your solo thing?
We're shooting a live DVD mm-hmm. with Twiketta in Milan, in Italy, in late April. And it's part of the Frontiers Fest. The record label's putting mm-hmm. on a 2-day festival. So it's awesome bands like Eclipse, Revolution Saints, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So we're basically gearing up for that. And then the summer, I think I'm actually going to be concentrating on this other band that I play in. It's a band out of Chicago that no one knows about because we haven't played a show yet. And it's called Space Wolf.
Okay.
And it's basically like a stoner kind of rock band that I actually sing in and play guitar.
Oh, that's cool.
And we have a lot of fun in that, man. I mean, it's just, yeah, we don't take ourselves too seriously. The songs are about, like, you know, Vikings and space exploration and just dumb shit, you know, because,
I hear you. We,
you know, rather than, you know, love and breakups and all that kind of stuff, we just make stuff up and have fun. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. It's kind of like in the vein of Red Fang, The Sword, Mastodon, that kind of stuff.
I gotcha. Also, it has that nice heavy groove to it.
Exactly, yeah. But it's totally melodic as well, because it's ingrained in me that all things are melodic.
Yeah, I understand.
So yeah. All the solo sections and all the musical departures and instrumental sections are all like very much like the instrumental stuff that I just mm-hmm. released.
Now, is that your push for that in the band? Do they come across as being like they don't really have that ingrained in them, and you're like pushing that into them?
In this particular band, Space Wolf?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the rest of the guys in the band, we're like a real mixed bag of musicians. Mm-hmm. It's a three-guitar band. Yeah. We get a chance to actually really experiment a lot with harmonies and guitar parts and stuff. And nowadays, with the way the bands layer in the studio, it kind of makes more sense to have three players in a band anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also we all take on singing duties. So one of the guitar players, Ryan, he was in a band called Black Dahlia Murder, which were a huge kind of, you know, black metal band.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon and Alex were in a band together called Defcon, which was more like an industrial band. Yeah. Me, as you know, is the more melodic cock rocker mm-hmm. of the band. And Gary is in like a bunch of real progressive bands. So between all of us, we have like a real love of like heavy groove mm-hmm. music, but also very melodic vocal ideas. And, you know, harmonically it's very, very melodic. And yeah, I probably push a lot of that stuff. If I wasn't in the band, it would probably be really, really, really heavy.
Yeah.
So I kind of pull the reins back a little. You know, like, hey guys, you know, let's maybe stick like a nice little breakdown section here and a few like nice chord changes.
They ever just laugh at you when you say something like that?
Sometimes. Sometimes. But like, we joke about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're like, oh, great. You know, because I played in Nelson, you know, and, you know, Kip Winger's a friend of mine and I played on stage with him. And so, you know, they get a kick out the fact that I'm totally at the opposite end of the spectrum from them. Yep. But when we all get in the room together and write, it makes perfect sense. We all completely complement each other stylistically.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Is there going to be any recorded versions of anything?
We've written a bunch of songs, and we actually went into the studio and recorded two tracks live, actually, reel to reel. Mm-hmm. You know, we just all went in there and jammed it out live. We just haven't had a chance to release it yet, so probably over the next, let me see, just after the Taikato thing gets recorded in Milan, we'll probably release like a little two-track, you know, like a double A-side, and it'll be the first thing that we throw out there. Looking forward to it as well. It's going to be good to have that different side of my personality out there in the void.
That looked good in your catalog. Get some for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think it's important, you know, a lot of people say, you know, why do people do side projects and this kind of stuff? And, you know, I guess they don't understand that, you know, musicians sometimes have very, very different styles of what they like listening to, you know, compared to what they go on stage and play. And although that I absolutely love playing Taiketto live and writing and all that kind of stuff, you know, generally speaking, a lot of the music that I listen to at home, which surprises a lot of people, because I don't really show that, you know, when I'm on stage. I'm up there wearing flamboyant 80s style stage pants with fringe and all this kind of stuff on it, and then, you know, I get home and put on my, like, sort of, you know, black vest and jeans and you know, upside down crosses t-shirts and listen to Mastodon while I'm out in my car. But I like it. I like the fact that I'm into all these different kinds of music. There's so much good stuff out there, and if people don't like, you know, really, really heavy vocals, you know, that's fine. I actually have the ability to kind of just dial that out. If things are getting too heavy vocal wise, I just dial it out and listen to the music underneath. Yeah. Like, let me think about a band, like, let's say, Between the Buried and Me.
Okay.
You know, where some of the vocals is like a little too heavy for me, but all the music that's going on underneath is absolutely awesome. So it's worth listening to.
Oh yeah. Yeah. A lot of the new music that's out these days that are going like that post-hardcore kind of vibe, the vocals are kind of like real gravelly, but the guitars and the melody lines and everything are really, really good. And it's like the same way you're looking at it. You definitely got to look at it at a different angle. If you're a musician, you do that.
Yeah, just give it a chance. Do you know what? I missed out on so many good bands when I was growing up because you know, the clique of friends that I was in said, this style of music is better. You know, so I missed out on listening to Megadeth and Metallica and stuff because I hung out with people that were into Poison and, you know, Def Leppard and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I missed out on listening to some of the early Alice in Chains stuff because people told me grunge was evil because it destroyed the hair metal scene. And the bottom line is, there's great music out there. You just got to ignore what everyone else is saying and give it a chance. There's a lot of great new music coming out, you know, and it's wonderful to see so many bands coming out. Also, where age doesn't seem to matter. You know, got bands out there that guys are in their 40s, you know, even 50s out there playing these festival circuits. It's brilliant. You know, all kinds of ages. There's something for everyone.
It's like M3 in Rocklahoma, those kind of festivals like that. Those are the ones that are bringing the older bands back out and keeping that vibe still out there for all of us, our older generation that's in the music. It's sad you got to think of ourselves like that, though. We're the older ones now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know what, man? Like, there's new bands playing those styles as well. I'm going into the studio tomorrow to do a guest solo on a band called Kicking Valentina. Great band from out of here in Atlanta. And, you know, they play more like a sleaze rock kind of style stuff. But they're a relatively new band. They're just recording their second album right now. And they're out there playing it, like, probably more tight than a lot of these bands that were the bands from back in the day. And they're totally playing that sound. So, you know, people have got... Look, I love these bands, and I play on the circuit with all these bands, but like, yeah, they're not going to be around in 20 years' time. Yeah. You know, not everyone's Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, so you've got to support new bands that are out there playing the music. Get out there, go and see the shows, buy their CDs, you know. It still amazes me that people will go and spend, you know, $5 on a coffee in Starbucks, but they won't spend $5 buying a new band's album.
That's right. What band do you think is going to be the next one that's going to be taking over, like, when these bands like Metallica and stuff like that, they retire. Who's the band that we're going to start looking out for? Is going to be like, Avenged Sevenfold or something like that?
Yeah. The new headline bands. Yeah, Avenged Sevenfold, definitely. I think they're already en route to that anyway. I think Mastodon will be one of them as well. They're slowly getting more and more melodic, you know, and their songwriting is really starting to aim towards... And I'm not going to say commercial, but it's just like that. I think they're thinking a lot more about the tracks as singles, and that appeals to a lot more of a wider audience. That, you know, if you heard the first Avenged Sevenfold album,
rough.
Night and day.
Hell yeah, it was the screamo stuff they were doing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was. And I remember my students coming into college saying, "Hey, can you teach me this?" And I'm like, "Damn, what's this?" You know, I mean, the players were amazing, but the vocals were, you know, just really screamy. And then bang, they hit that. I think it was their third album, and it was like a light bulb had gone on for them, and they're like, look, if we're going to actually start making some bank here, we need to start tapping into a wider audience. And let's face it, the wider audience does not really like listening to those kind of vocals, you know, the matter. And I know there's people out there right now probably thinking, you know what you're talking about, man. You know, and I get it because I listen to bands with harsh vocals, but the average person connects with lyrics. Yeah. And if you can't understand the lyrics, then you're not going to connect to the song.
That's right. I think a producer has a big input with a band when they're in that studio there. And when they're listening, they're saying, when the band's going here, saying, this is what we got. And, you know, then they ask them, now that we got you in here, what can you help us do? And the producer give them insight saying, man, this shit ain't going to work. You know, let's try this and try that. And I think that was the thing with Avenged.
The producer's role is key, man.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's another thing, because now budgets are kind of coming down because, you know, there's a lot less major label activity.
Oh, yeah.
So to speak, the budgets aren't there for these bands. So what they're tending to do is go into the studio just hiring the engineer, you know, because they don't have the budget for a producer. Yeah. Now, Bruce, the guy that did the last Taiketto album, this guy was amazing, man. I mean, he was, you know, very knowledgeable musically, just had great ideas all the time. So it really helped the band whenever we were hitting brick walls to have that outside opinion that was like, look, I'm going to make an executive decision here. I think you guys are overthinking this. This is what we should do here. And there were occasions where we totally changed choruses, where it just wasn't working. And that's that producer role. They step in and they're like, look, I'm going to be that creative part of your band that's not part of your band, so to speak. I mean, look at all those great producers. You know, you're Bob Ross, Bruce Fairbanks,
the Rick Rubens. Yep.
You know, they all had a good role, a very important role within those albums. Mutt Lang.
Oh yeah, yeah. What's he doing these days?
Who, Mutt Lang?
Yeah, is he still with Shania?
I don't know. I don't think so. If he knows what's good for him, he's probably sitting by a pool somewhere just enjoying himself, drinking a few Mai Tais. That's exactly what I'd probably be doing if I'd made that amount of money.
Because I heard Shania was getting ready to start working on a new record. And if she is, he's probably going to jump back into the control seat over there and just, you know, suck up some of that dollars along with his wife. If he's still with her.
Do it, man. Do it, yeah. Get your points.
That's it. So on your solo one that you have, is there anything like that people should be looking forward to? Is there something that's going to jump out at them that's different sounding or something different?
With this instrumental album?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. You know what? It's if you're into guitar music in any capacity, whether it is like super melodic, you know, lead guitar, or, you know, the neoclassical genre of Shrapnel Records stuff from back in the 80s, or whether you're into progressive stuff, you know, like Dream Theater, or even like that Liquid Tension project that those guys did. There's all of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, although the styles change from track to track, it's still like a very,
it's cohesive.
You know, the body of work it's very cohesive, you know. And I'm really, really proud of it. Every single track that's on there is completely emotionally driven. Like, there's a story behind every single song. And on the credits for the digital booklet that goes with it, I've done like a little explanation on what the songs were about and how I wrote them, you know, because, you know, a lot of people like reading those liner notes, and most of the time it's half of the booklet is lyrics. Of course, there's no lyrics because it's an instrumental body of work. So it gives you a bit of an insight into what was going on in my head when I was writing these tracks. And the first track that's on there, called Undefeated, was very much inspired from when my father passed away about 5 years ago. So I really think it comes across, you know, when you listen to it, it sounds like a very, very emotionally driven tune. Unveil is, I always wanted to write one of those kind of neoclassical, old school tunes. And, you know, that's what I did there. I've done a cover of one of my dad's 70s progressive band tunes. He was in a band called Deep Feeling back in the early 70s.
Oh, okay.
They were full on prog, you know, kind of like Yes and, you know, Emerson, Lake and Palmer and that kind of stuff. And so I did a instrumental cover using like an Ebow to do all of the multi-track vocal lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
It's all quite heavy as well, rhythmically underneath.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a case of, like a lot of the guitar players I grew up listening to, Satriani, people like that,
yeah,
and Marty Friedman. Rhythmically, there's a lot going on underneath them. Like, I spent as much attention to the rhythm section as I did to the lead guitar section. So it's very complex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me anyway,
yeah.
it's very complex, and the production was just great. I spared no expense, went into the same studio that I recorded with Furion, Cross, and just went in there and tracked this thing. I got Garrett Whitlock, who's the drummer in Tremonti.
Mm-hmm.
He played drums for me on it, and he did a phenomenal job as well. That guy is just one of the most underrated drummers out there.
Nice.
So, if you're into any kind of emotionally driven music, I think that you'll really enjoy this. I really, really do. And you can go and buy the tracks at chrisgreenmusic.com, or it's on Amazon or iTunes. It's a Chris Green Unveil EP. It's better than a chai tea latte at Starbucks.
I hear you. And I just happen to have a Starbucks gift card. I have a Starbucks gift card right here for $5. Nick, I didn't even give me nothing.
There you go. Take it back and get an iTunes token.
with your new one here, is this the kind of music on it where you actually can like dim your lights and close your eyes and like get the vibe of the song with it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really a roller coaster of styles as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think it's good. It's the kind of music that you can crank up in the car, or if you sit with it on the headphones, you're going to slowly notice more and more stuff that's going on within there. I spent a lot of time writing quite complex like string arrangements on these songs as well. So there's a lot of movement in the tracks. I don't know what else to say, man. I'm very excited about it, as you can tell. So, I appreciate people like yourself, taking time to, get it heard.
I appreciate music, and when I got your stuff here, man, I'm turned on to it, and this is something where I'm really gonna, go way out of my way of not only listening to more of it, but to really dig into more of your catalog and more of your music, and to re-listen to things over and get a better appreciation for you as a guitarist.
Oh, thank you, man. I mean, I appreciate it. It's all I do, whether whether it's with my brothers in Taiketo or Rubicon Cross or the solo stuff or Space Wolf. It's all I do, and it's all I love doing.
Nice. Let's see here. Just a couple more things here, and we'll let you get going. But how can people get a hold of Unveil?
So basically, if you go to my website, chrisgreenmusic.com,
mm-hmm.
I actually have only, I think I've got maybe 10 or 15 of the CDs left. I did a limited edition run of physical CDs, and I sign them and I send them out. So anyone in the continental US, they're only it's like $8.99, including shipping for a CD. Or you can buy the music digitally, and you can download a digital booklet. If you go to iTunes or Amazon, you can just download the music, but you don't get the digital booklet.
Yeah.
So I always recommend people going to chrisgreenmusic.com and getting it there.
Nice.
And you can also, there's also a bunch of stuff on there, like videos. I do like a lot of like tuition videos and stuff online. You can find, links to them there, and biography, discography. It gives you an idea about everything I've been up to, over the last, 15 years or so.
Nice. Chris, can you do us a quick favor?
Yeah.
Can you do a promo ID for our radio show? Just say your name, you're listening to Maximum Threshold, and throw some crazy out at the end of it. Don't put no thought into this,
man. Yeah, of course. Yeah, let me know when you're ready.
Go for it.
Okay, this is Chris Green. You're listening to Maximum Threshold. Keep threading.
That was perfect. Do you have your guitar plugged in right now? Do the Black Star?
Yeah.
Play us something.
Sure. Hang on.
Nice. I like that sound, man. It has some nice sound to it.
I know, it's cool. I've got a little 74 SG here. Mm-hmm. Great guitar. And yeah, I'm just plugging into this thing. Overdrive one, little bit of delay on it. It's great. Nice. It's brilliant for just sitting in the lounge and jamming away at the weekend.
Do you have a PRS over there?
Oh, I've got a couple. I've got three of them over there, actually. Actually, I've got an obnoxious collection. I have about 160 guitars.
Oh, damn. I understand you, too. When you say you have so many guitars, there's reasons for every single one of them. And every single one has a different sound, a different feel, a different vibe. And for if you want to play, I know it. I was up to like 30 guitars just for that reason. And I was like, it's time to cut back.
That's the thing, and that's why I grabbed this one, this 74 SG. I would take it out on tour, but the frets are so run down, and I know it won't play the same if I get it refretted, so I just keep it for little special occasions. I have a little tinkle away on it. But it plays like a PRS. You wouldn't believe it. It's an unbelievable guitar.
I had PRS, I don't remember what year it was. It's probably like a 2002 or 2001 or something like that. It had the Dragon pickups in there, and it was a teal black. Oh, I love that guitar. The only thing weird about it is that neck. It's got the wide neck, and I never was really into a wide neck. I think that was one of the reasons why I unloaded that for a Les Paul Standard.
The wide thin neck?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like them, man. Because I came from playing Ibanez, so it was a very easy transition for me to go from Ibanez to PRS. Mm-hmm. I got like three of those 20th anniversary ones, that were like 2005 and 2005, 2006. I can't remember, but they're great. I mean, they're my go-to for the acrobatic.
Yeah, it looks good on you too.
Guitar playing.
That's you. When you
what's that?
It looks good on you too. It's like fine jewelry.
Yeah, it's like a nice little watch or something, you know. Accessorized with PRS guitar. Maybe that's the next level of advertisement for them. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of be accessorized. People walking around shopping malls with a PRS is hanging off their back.
Are you endorsed by them?
I got an artist deal with those guys. I mean, I'm not as big as, the Tremontis and Navarro. And
they give you a good deal on them.
What's that?
They give you a good deal on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool.
Absolutely. I mean, these are expensive guitars. Oh, yeah, they are. Man, but like when you have one, you realize why they're expensive.
That's
I get it. When you look at a guitar, it's wood and strings and bits of metal and stuff, and you think to yourself, how on earth can these things cost, $10,000? You think that's a car, that's like a holiday to Mauritius with my family or something, but then you play it and you're like, I'm going to put the holiday to Mauritius on hold. I'm good with this.
I had a Les Paul Supreme, and it was a AAA wood, and it was like the prettiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And just holding, I was like, I don't even really think I want to play this, because all I did was just look at it and just admire the wood and the finish and the flames and everything in there. It was like, and this guitar just played so good. And it's like, well, I ain't gonna ever take this out of my house. So what am I gonna do with it? I admire it.
I have guitars like that too, man. I've got guitars that I just don't really want to take out of the house, just in case. Because it seems like, fragile stickers are like code word for throw, airports. Right. So I just don't like the way the thought of, them throwing one of my Les Pauls in the neck breaking or something. I can't handle it.
I understand.
So now I have guitars that I keep in Europe. I bought a bunch of guitars that I just keep in Europe, and they stay there for when I tour, so I don't have to travel with them.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah. Less hassle at the airport, too.
That's right. Okay, Chris, man, we're going to get going here, but I definitely thank you, man, for being out here talking shop with us and everything you got going on with you.
Oh, thank you for the support, mate. I really, really appreciate it. Oh, anytime, man.
And Nick, when are you going to be playing M3 again?
I mean, hopefully. Mm-hmm. We'd love to be playing it as soon as possible. So, if we could get it this year, it'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we absolutely loved playing there. It's you know, it's in the lap of the gods right now. So yeah, fingers crossed this year and next year we'll be there.
I got you, man. Okay, man. Hey, I want to thank you again for being on the show, and definitely stay in touch, man.
Welcome.
You got my number here, and whenever you feel like you want to talk music or got something you want to promote, I'm always here, man.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Okay, now I'm gonna play Unveil for everybody tonight. So I'm gonna turn them on to it.
Do it, man. Do it.
Okay, man, and have yourself a good one.
You too. Take care, mate.
You too. Bye.